Another episode on the Duan Marrero podcast. This is your host, Duan Marrero, episode 188. We're almost there to episode 200. By the way, guys, before I get into this episode, today is National Running Day. So for those runners who enjoy running outside or running inside, make sure you guys go get a run in. And I'm joined here with the lovely Jim D'Lo, who is my co-host and the legend himself, Earl Smith. And I have Rob in the nest right now producing this episode. Earl, good morning.
Good morning. Good morning. The only thing I hate, I'm not running anymore.
Oh.
Because normally I would be out there and then run, because I used to ran in a mini marathon one time, you know.
How long ago?
I want to say maybe about, I was in my 60s, maybe about 10 or 12 years ago, maybe a little longer than that. But I was an avid walker and a jogger, and so that was my one of my goals was to run a marathon, but I never got to that point. But it was imperative that I got in 4 or 5 miles almost every day. So I was doing. I was into it, you know.
Jim,
how you doing?
Jim's off right now. His mic is off. Cutting his mic on. But yeah, I just did my first half marathon, and I did 3 potty breaks, and I was able to run 2 hours and 24 minutes at the Lifetime half marathon in Chicago. Right. I was pretty proud of myself.
Oh, yes.
Again, 2 hours, 24 minutes with 3 potty breaks. So if I didn't have to use the bathroom, then I probably would have nailed it under 2 hours. I think Jim's back on.
Yeah, thanks a lot, guys. Thanks for having me in with you again.
Oh, I appreciate you.
It's your podcast. He invites me all the time. I mean, I don't know why, Earl.
He's the pioneer, and I shot Earl a random text, and he read it, and I was like, okay, he has 30 minutes to respond. If not, I'm calling him at 5 once I leave work. And he responded and was like, I'll be there. Just shoot me a text if it's a go to confirm. And
Earl and I saw each other last night at the PNW. We're on the, if you guys are listening elsewhere, we're on the campus of PNW. We've got a pretty close relationship. And they have the John Friend Athletic Scholarship. Anybody wants to, you know, donate to that, it's all being matched right now by Glenn Skolnick, Larry Johnson, and and Bob Grand. And we raised $100,000, and it got matched $100,000. So last night it went over $200,000 for PNW Athletics. And it's all in the name of John Friend, my high school football coach and my confidant for a long time. And he was the athletic director at PNW, and he's been over there about 40 years now. But Earl and I both share, the same admiration for John Friend. You came out last night, Earl. What is it about you and John Friend? Why you guys been so close all these years?
Well, we had a manifested interest, first of all, in sports. And down through the years, we just kind of hooked up some kind of way, and it maintained it down through the years. And he's sort of like a loyal type person. I mean, anytime I call on him, sometimes I had some concerns, and I would call him, and we would talk a little bit, because I respected the years he had. And plus, we're close to the same age. As a matter of fact, I think we both approaching 90 which
hold
is
on
right,
a second.
Which is
you're
right
approaching 90.
I'll be 90 in January 19, 1934.
Well, I was off. I say like early 60s, mid 50s. So I told Rob that. Yeah, my bad. I was way off.
You know, when you're that young and you're looking up, they're all the same old. You know what I mean?
Well, I think one of the, like I was telling one of the guys last night that made some comments about what how Coach Friend had influenced him. Well, down through the years, I continually get information how well my guys are doing and respecting the fact that what I had done for them. And then the other thing, too, I probably spent more time in these classroom teachings. See, I started out as a sixth grade teacher, and I spent a lot of time teaching elementary. And believe it or not, my most favorable responses are coming from former elementary coaches. Kids rather than the players.
Really?
Yeah, it's been unbelievable that they haven't forgotten some of the things that I said, you know, and that I did. So
are you guys both old school?
So my what?
Are you guys both old school?
Old school, yeah.
What's that mean?
I don't know.
Come on, what's that mean to you? What when I say you're old school, John Friend is old school, John Doherty was there last night for a short period, he's old school. You know, there were a lot of old school people. What is old school?
Well, it's a way that you adjust to certain issues that are going on today. And we see some striking differences in the way things are handled. Probably we would have done it in a different manner. I think the success story would have been the same. But I have a tendency sometimes to think that this younger generation sort of overlook the input or the impact that older people could have. I mean, I realize what my age is, but I still think I can make some contributions to what's going on today with kids, you know. And it's almost like I went to a basketball practice once, maybe next year or so ago, and I saw some things that, in my estimation, he shouldn't be doing.
No accountability at the practice.
Yeah, and so... I asked him if I could make some recommendations, and he said yes, and it turned out to be right. But it's just the idea that sometimes the way I envision things, it might not be in accord the way you think, but there's some merits to it. It's almost like when I first started out coaching. See, Bobby Knight is a real good friend of mine. Bob is.
I'm aware of that, and I'm aware
friend,
that your techniques were similar at times.
Yes, yes. I called him. He was recruiting one of my 7-foot players, Wallace Bryan, during that time.
And Emerson, right?
Yes, that's when I first got to meet
him. I met Wallace.
And so I had some concerns about my practice, and he told me to put my practice plans together, and if I could come down there and bring my practice plans, he would take a look at it. That's when we first got started. So I got everything together, all diagram. Breakdown, time elements.
How long did it take you to put your practice plan together back in the day for you?
Oh, it all depends on what I was trying to accomplish the day before, you know, and I would try to find, I would say maybe an hour, a couple of hours or so I would go, you know, look into it. And so, but anyway, when I took my practice plans down tonight and he looked at it, and the first thing he said was, of course, he let out a curse word. I can't say what it was.
Yeah, we're on AM radio. We're recording this podcast on AM radio, so thank you for not swearing.
Yeah, yes,
sorry, go ahead.
He said, but you're talking too much. Because I had 5 minutes for this, 10 minutes for that, 8 minutes for this, but I was doing all the talking. And he said, no. So he asked me whether or not I had some players who did well what I was trying to accomplish. Say, like if I had you working on a drill and you mastered it and 4 or 5 other guys didn't. You had that group. Then I moved to another group. So in other words, when the whole practice time was completed, the kids had, which I would consider, real good instruction because you had mastered what I was trying to teach. You had that ability to convert it. Kids seemed to adjust the way you were doing it more so because you were actually performing a drill. So I changed everything, man. My practice time changed totally because I felt I was accomplishing more from having my players to be more directly involved in what the drill was trying to accomplish.
So Bobby Knight in Indiana here where we are, and obviously Coach Smith coached in Gary, Indiana. We all look to the Bobby Knight model as the way to coach coming up. But he had his critics that he was too aggressive, he was too harsh toward the kids, too much discipline. How do you take that?
Well, the 7-footer, Wallace Bryant.
Yeah?
He really
pull wanted, that mic up just a little for him, will you? There you go.
Yeah,
right
he
there.
Really wanted Wallace Bryant. And I personally thought that was the best place for him to go because of his discipline and the way he controlled his players. Benson was the center during that time.
Kirk Benson.
Right, and I had watched Benson in a lot of big-time drills because I used to go down and watch Knights practice all the time. Anytime I could get there, I went. And but Wallace probably was all set to go to the IU. But Jim Cruz played for Knight. You remember Cruz?
Yeah, good guard.
Good guard. Was one of his assistants. He got involved in a one-on-one basketball game with Cruz, and he beat Cruz. But it's the way he handled himself in beating the way Cruz talked to him. So Wallace, of course, I can say this now, but he was staying with my mom. His family situation was deplorable.
You could say it now. You probably wouldn't get away with that now.
And anyway, he called me because I had taken him down. He said, Coach, pick me up because I don't want to stay. So I went down. He was down there for a camp. And I picked him up early in the morning and brought him back. So he told me what had happened. And when I relayed that message tonight, what Cruz had done, he hooked on three hookup on line or whatever. Cruz on one end, I was on one, he was on the other. Cuss Cruz out. I mean, because Wallace decided he didn't want to go there, not because of Knight, but because of Cruz. And I never will forget that, man. He laid him out. But Wallace, I think his plateau of success would have been greater if he had gone to Knight rather than going to San Francisco.
Well, it's obvious that Coach Smith is a huge fan of Coach Knight.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, and that discipline. By the way, I think we need to lay a little groundwork on who you are to some of the people that are joining the podcast.
Yeah, the new listeners.
The new listeners.
I know you're a legend.
A lot of people around here. But yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, if you could just, your background. You achieved so much, so many accolades, so many milestones. But for this new era of kids coming up when they listen to this episode and they see that I have you, how would you categorize yourself? Like what world would you put yourself in with everything you've accomplished in your life?
Well, first of all, I think that I had a profound understanding that any success that I had encountered, any talents that I had, was God-given. Sort of loaned to me to utilize. And I tried to the best of my ability to take advantage, not in a bragging situation, but the things that I had accomplished, I wanted to try to manifest that to the kids that I was coaching and teaching. That was the first thing. Secondly, I've been blessed because during the time of reaching that plateau of success, I've always believed that God planted certain people to help you reach that plateau. It could be from all walks of life. To give example, I ended up being a long jumper, and I broke the state record in the long jump that had been down there for 20 years.
What school?
Gary Roosevelt. And the way I got started, I paid tribute to my gym teacher at Lincoln Elementary School. During that day, they had what they call the Post-Tribune relays. All the kids, you might have participated in it, poster view, and he had this big track meet, all of big, breaking down a grade classification. I was a 75 pounder coming out of Delaney Projects. Everybody could run, and so everybody had speed almost. So today we had to qualify for that track meet. She was going to pick three runners. So she said, I'm going to walk down here 50 yards, 60 yards or so, and raise my hand. We all land up, see all the 75, and when I bring my hand down, I'm going to take the top three. She raised her hand up, and everybody took off. So quite naturally, I'm trying to follow what she said, and I'm last. Everybody cut in front of me, everything. So she said, but that wasn't fair. I mean, you know, she said, but no. I picked the first three, you can broad jump. I said, what the heck is that? Well, that's where you run, hit the board, and jump into the pit. I had never done that. So I go home, and my mom says, just go out there and do the best you can do. And that was history, because I went out there and won the 75-pound division. And, of course, when I got to high school, and things kept going on. So as I can say that, I can stand here and just kind of sit here and relate to people down that helped me reached a certain plateaus of success. When I was downstate in the long jump, I won in my junior year. I'm downstate my senior year where I broke the record. The runaway was chewed up. And so I said, hey, I'm not going to run down this runaway. It's all chewed up. I'm going to run around the smooth grass and cut over to the board. So I did that. Boom, bang.
Is that legal?
Yeah, it was legal. It was legal during that time.
Then it was. Yeah.
And so the guy that broke the record, that had the record, was a guy by the name of Speed Scott, Gary Frable. My dad played football with him. And by the way, my dad was one of Gary's all-time greats, too. My father was football.
Ed Frable.
All-state.
I did not know that. I knew all the Iowa stuff. We're going to get to that in a second, but I did not know that you actually had some heritage.
Yeah, my dad. And as a matter of fact, they won Frable's first state championship in track. I think it was 1927. And so, but anyway, I'm crossing over and I'm not doing well. So Speed Scott, the original owner of the record, called me up. He's at the meet. He said, what the heck are you doing? I said, well, the runaway is all messed up. So he said, do you practice that way? I said, no, sir. He said, then get yourself in the middle of that runaway, come down in that dirt and jump. I broke his record on the next jump. That's when I really began to learn the significance of people in your life. If you have something that you can give them and make a contribution that can enhance their life, not only as an athlete, but as an individual, that's what you do. And that's been my life. I can just go on with.
Go to the Delaney Projects. You said everybody in the Delaney Projects could run.
That was down the street.
I was
in 25th.
Right across the street from Roosevelt. Had the garden right across the street. To give you an example, Bob Stearns was the first black quarterback, first team all state quarterback from Roosevelt, 1951. Lived right behind me. As a matter of fact, I was instrumental in getting him into the Hall of Fame for football because I'm on that committee and I'm in the Hall of Fame, so I was able to help. He got in about 3 years ago. He's passed now. Two doors down. Two houses down. Who lived there? Willie Williams. You ever heard of Willie Williams?
Name sounds familiar. Probably broke my time.
I've heard of Willie Williams.
Willie Williams broke Jesse Owens' world record.
That's crazy.
In the 100 meters. In Germany, over in Berlin, Germany. Two doors down. I couldn't beat him running, but he was two doors down from me. I mean, there's just so much talent that was in the projects. It was unreal. And that's just giving an idea about two.
How did you make it out of Delaney?
Well, I broke that record. I was indicated as being the second or the best high school track and field participant in America. I mean, the All-American track team. And so everybody was recruiting. You know, I visited different colleges and during that time. As a matter of fact, I was taking an airplane ride for the first time in my life. I was scared to get on these planes. I signed a letter of intent. The guy sitting next to me went to the University of Michigan. He's a doctor. I forgot his name. At the banquet last night, he was sitting on my right.
Larry Johnson.
Yeah, I think that.
Yeah, Larry Johnson. And Larry Johnson went to Munster. Then he played as a wide receiver for Bull Schembechler. And he's one of the guys that was donated.
He was sitting next to me.
Yeah.
And I told him that I signed a letter of intent to go to Michigan. He said, what? He said, but you ended up at Iowa. How did that happen? Well, during the summer, we got summer jobs, some of the recruits that going to Iowa, painting the football stadium. And I was down there painting. Coach Cannon, who was the head coach, track coach, came by. He said, Smith, he said, I think you need to save some of your money. You might need it. So I misunderstood what he was saying. You know, I don't have all this input about college. I'm thinking that they're taking something away from my scholarship. So I didn't even tell him. I called home and told my people I was coming home. I got a bus ride and came home. And when I got to my house, who was sitting in the living room? I don't know if you've heard of him. Judge Duke Slater.
Duke
Slater, all-time Iowa great. Judge in Chicago. As a matter of fact, this past year, they just renamed the football field to Duke Slater football field this year.
At Iowa?
At Iowa.
Yeah, that's where I've heard the name. Yeah.
So he said, I came here to recruit. He said, but I thought you were at Iowa. I told him what had happened. He said, why don't you go to Iowa and check out the Iowa program? I said, but Iowa wasn't recruiting me. He said, well, I'll tell you what. So he got me a bus ticket to take the bus ride to Iowa City. And the track coach, Coach Kretzmeyer, met me at the bus station with his family and his two kids. So normally, when you want to recruit, as you probably know, they put you up in a hotel. He took me directly to his house. I spent 3 days at his house. I said, you know what? This guy's for real. I mean, he treated me like a member of the family. I got to go here. So I changed, and that's how I ended up at Iowa.
Just in case if you guys are listening live on the radio or obviously the audio podcast, if you're watching this is fairly evident, but right here on Coach's phone is the Iowa cover. He's got the Iowa number 14 jersey, which we'll talk about in a second, and he's got the Iowa hat. And I'm sure he may have Iowa boxers on right now.
Got some socks on.
Got some Iowa socks on. So that changed your life and you went to Iowa. What worked for you at Iowa?
Well, I'm down there on a track scholarship. Not football, because I had played football in high school, but my football coach, I really had me playing quarterback my freshman year and my sophomore quarterback my junior year, and then the year that I was supposed to step in as a running back, we had a big game, the first game, and he was from the old school. He didn't want you wearing long socks, long sockets. And for some reason, I decided to wear some long sockets. So he got upset and didn't let me start the other guy. And the other guy scored a couple of touchdowns, so I played behind him my senior year when I had the initial start, but because of what old school thinking, I didn't need to have no long socks on. I mean, what the heck, you know? But anyway, so I'm down in Iowa not thinking about football whatsoever. Three guys came to Iowa from Steubenville, Ohio. One was Calvin Jones, who won the Outland Trophy for the most valuable football player in the country, highest college. The other two was Frank Gillum, All-American, and Eddie Vincent, my running back in football, led the Big Ten in rushing. They convinced me to go out. Well, during that time, freshmen weren't eligible. You know, first year you had to sit out. So Iowa had the greatest recruiting class in the history of the school. And I knew I wasn't going to get in because I'm not on scholarship. I'm just winning the wins, Prince. Probably on the fourth team freshman. Got all these great high school recruits and all that. So they had got ready to punt the ball, and one of the guys couldn't find his helmet. And they was getting ready to punt. So what did I do? I ran out there on the field. And I could hear him calling me now, telling me, bring myself back out. What you doing, crazy? Something? So they was cursing.
Wait, this is during a Big Ten game?
They're doing a freshman game. Inter-squad game.
Inter-squad, all right.
But during that time, it was massive because freshmen were eligible, yeah. And they had 50,000 maybe or 30,000 at this game. So I caught the ball and brought it back for about 80 yards for a touchdown. So I went from, who is this Smith? Where did he come from? So then the next year, I couldn't participate in spring practice because I was running track. And we were playing at the University of Michigan, all schools. The starting halfback got hurt. Stearns, who was the backup, the quarterback, they switched him to halfback. They moved him. He was starting, and I was behind him. He went in the game and messed up on the play. And he put me in. I scored two touchdowns against Michigan, and that was it. The rest of the time, I finished up starting at the University of Iowa, number 14. Yeah, it's right there. So that's how I got into football.
So with that adversity, and we're just talking sports, how did you deal with the racial tension in Iowa? Because that would have been a huge culture shock for me.
I'm glad you mentioned that. That was during the 50s, man. Racial tensions were real high across the country. University of Iowa started 5 blacks. Unheard of. Cal Jones, Frank Gillum at the end, Cal Jones and Lyman, Frank Gillum, Eddie Vincent at the other halfback, and I was at the other 5 of us. I'm going to say this in all honesty. Now, a lot of people might not believe it, but I of course, quite naturally by being from to Indiana to some extent, but racial was more prevalent back here than it was in Iowa City. I didn't look at the color barrier in Iowa City. I'm going to say that. We went where we wanted to go. A lot of the guys had interracial dating. A couple of guys ended up marrying interracial marriages, dated interracial situations. It was just, I don't know how to explain it, but I didn't recognize a whole lot of things that was going on until I came back home to Gary, Indiana, and maybe try to venture out to some of the areas to see, you know, the racism. But I didn't encounter that at Iowa.
What years were you at Iowa?
I went there in 1952, and I went back to finish up in 57 because I got cut by the Bears, and I didn't want to go to Canada to play. So I needed to pick up some hours to graduate. So that's why I went back and finished up in mid-year at Iowa, 57.
Did you come right back to Gary and start teaching?
I came right back. And I'm going to tell you how I got that job. That's another story about people. Johnny Kyle was the athletic director, a position that I had. Johnny Kyle had coached my dad at Gary Frabel. He was a football coach, head football coach. Now he was the athletic director for School City of Gary. I came home for a visit, and I was down to the school, and I really went to see him because he was a good friend of my dad. He called me Junior. He said, Junior, he said, what are you majoring in college? I said, journalism, I want to write because I like to write. He said, do you want to eat? So what do you mean? He said, if you get in journalism, you're going to starve to death. He said, get into education and elementary ed, and you get hair. And, man, I went back, switched some of my course makeup, got a major in elementary ed, came home and got a job just like that. And that's what started me, because I got the hair. My other friend, Stearns, physical education stuff, he didn't get hired. Willie Williams, a board world record holder from Illinois, he didn't get hired because they were in the wrong field. Elementary ed, got in right away. So I was working maybe three years before they even got in the system. And so I thank Johnny Kyle for that. I mean, that was a person that turned out to be a turning point because he got me directed into elementary ed, and I loved it. I mean, I loved it. I mean,
what was Gary like in the mid-50s?
Well, it's hard, you know, when you're coming up.
Hold on a second, Coach. You got all those championship rings. You keep hitting them on the table, and those people listening are gonna. If you don't mind doing that.
When you're coming up in at Gary Roosevelt, because of my parents having that impact that they wanted me to be in ahead, manifest some talent to go to these bigger places that were recruiting me, okay? Well, my dad worked in the mill, and he got me a job out there one summer. I worked a month, quit. Why? He was working the wheel mill. The wheels on the trains, they had to shape them, and all that stuff came off and fell down in a pit area. And you had to go down there and shovel that stuff out. You could only work 15 minutes at the top, and they would holler down, Smith, time to come up. So I would come up after being down there sweating. He said, if I stay out here, I'll be weighing 120 pounds, you know. But he, the kind of work that he did, I just respected what he was doing, cleaning, working, that type of thing. So I had parents who imparted the idea of that, you got to work. Work is important. So that's what I did as far as trying to Gary, we had ambitions, things that we wanted to do. Let me give you an example. I live in Morningside. You know where that is?
Where?
Morningside.
No.
It's on 45, right behind where Lou Wallace used to be. I could walk to Lou Wallace from where I ended up buying a house. That's where I live now. My kids graduated from Lou Wallace. A couple blocks, I'm right there, right through the park area. Morningside was a lot like Miller. If you had two areas in Gary that was sort of persona forecasted as being the place to live in Gary would be Morningside. Doctors, lawyers lived there in Miller. As a kid, playing with the Pee Wee Preps, they used to give us bus tokens to take the bus to play Lou Wallace prep team, 12-year-olds. But we would save the bus tokens so we could use them to go to the show the next day. We walked. But as a kid, we always took a shortcut through Morningside. And the house that I live in today, that could have been one of the houses because all we did was walk through there saying, that's my house. You would say, no, I got that. It's my house. That's my house. We walked down that whole block area picking out houses that we would like to live in. That's my house. And who knows, that could be where I'm living now. That could have been the house I pointed to when I was 13, 12. But that's the kind of thing that we kind of laboring under because coming out of the projects, we didn't envision living in a house. I was living in projects, you know. But those homes, man, that's, man, living somewhere like that, I couldn't believe it, you know. But I said, I can see that plain as day, that that's my house. No, you can't have that one. I picked that house, you know, that's mine, you know. So I came up with that. And of course, the job situation has always been great. I can't complain about that.
So you were elementary school teacher. When did you make the leap to coaching?
Well, that's something that I always wanted to do. We used to help Roosevelt quite naturally. That was Willie Williams, Stearns. We all back in the system. We all assisted the Roosevelt coaches because we weren't coaching, but we had a chance to get an assistant job. Now, I mean, just for nothing. But that's Roosevelt. That's my school. So we all worked out there together. He had all of us out there helping Roosevelt. And so I got a break when Stearns got the head football job at Tolleston. That was it. When he got the head job, he reached back and said, well, I want Earl Smith to be one of my assistants. So I went over with him. He was the head coach at Tolleston. That's how it got started. Then they closed Tolleston when they opened up Westside. Everybody thought that Stearns was going to get the head football job at Westside. Deserved it by all means. I'm not saying that we didn't deserve it as assistants, but he was already the head coach. So they put in the paper the people that was assigned to a teaching assignment to Westside as a teacher. My name was in there. Not position, but as a teacher. So everybody was assuming that because of my football background, I was going to be the head football coach. So I went by to see the head principal, because if I was going to be the head coach, thinking I'd like to pick my assistants, would that be okay with you? I can remember him standing there that morning and said, Smith, I'm very, very proud of the fact that you're going to be with us at Westside as an assistant football coach. So I said, but I looked at him and I said, what? I said, is Stearns going to be the head coach? Because I jumping there with Stearns. He said, no, Stearns is not going to be a head coach. You're not going to be the head coach, and I don't want to say anything negative about who got the job. So I said, well, okay, fine. If that's your selection, that's your choice. But I don't want to coach. I'll coach tennis and golf. And that's what I started doing at Westside, tennis coach and a golf coach. The job at Frable opened up. And I didn't have any idea about that. And I got a call from the principal at Frable and said, how would you like to be the head basketball coach at Frable? So I said, fine. I mean, this is before they closed Frable. I took the job for 1 year. And that's when I went back to Westside. And so then the Emerson job opened up. And a guy that I had worked with was assistant principal at Emerson. I had no idea I was going to get that job because I had only had 1 year coaching varsity. And the guys that were trying to get the head coaching job at Emerson were former coaches, guys that had more experience. And when I went over, Mr. England, who was the principal, said, I want you as my head coach.
How old were you?
Maybe 30-something, early 30s.
How long were you at Emerson?
10 years. And that's when the Wallace job opened up. But see, what a lot of people didn't realize about the Emerson thing, we didn't have a gym. We played all our games on the road. I practiced in an elementary school. I was happy they built this Jefferson Elementary School, which is 15 blocks west of Emerson. But my kids walked there after practice every day. Snow on the ground, everything. They walked to practice over there. That's where we practiced. I sat in on the, when they were building Jefferson, and I was, by all means, put a regulation floor in. They didn't do that. They put in a smaller floor, one real basket on one side. The other side was a miniature basket for the little kids. So I practiced there for 10 years. Played all our games on the road. And that's why when I tell people the bonding that existed between my players at Emerson, I've had some great players all around. Frabel, Tawai Abbott, nothing like that Emerson group, because there were so many ways that we had to come together as a unit because we were at a disadvantaged situation, and we had to make it work, and we did. So those guys, these are the guys that call all the time and that I talk to all the time because they understood what we went through. It was a love affair. That's what it was. Not only did we respect one another, we really love one another.
So this podcast is actually recorded live in the JED TV WJOB studios on the campus of Purdue Northwest. So some of you may be driving around. So just to remind you, it's Earl Smith, former Gary City athletic director, Indiana Hall of Fame football player, obviously a star at Iowa. And this is the DeJuan Marrero podcast. I'm Jim Deedlow. I'm actually on vacation, so I'm probably talking more than I normally do.
This is great.
It's because I'm kind of bottled up in me. But, you know, I got one question, then I usually step out, and then DeJuan kind of finishes up. But here you are. You're almost 90 years old. Tell me something that you would want to, some kid that's coming up, especially a good athlete, let's say maybe a good basketball player, he's 16 years old, and he's coming into this world, and maybe he's coming out of Gary. What would you want to tell him?
Well, first of all, to recognize the fact, if this particular individual is talented, then to help him to understand, you know, where his talent came from. And as somebody mentioned last night, hard work, success. And without hard work, you don't have success. Somebody said that last night, which is true. To impart on them about what their role is, to stay humble and to work up to expectations and even sometimes beyond expectations. The thing that's troublesome for me today, charter schools, you know, and I don't want to knock it fully, but there are kids to me that have talents that they don't know anything about, or it has to be developed. The way you enhance your ability to reach that pinnacle of success is if there are talents to get, I mean, if there's facilities to take advantage of them. But if you don't have those facilities, how do you know what talents you might have? Everybody's not going to be a basketball player, football player, track, gymnast, tennis, soccer, swimming. But you need swimming pools. You need soccer fields. You need softball fields. You need areas that kids can participate and develop. Those things are missing. I'm in a school that does not have a track. Fine. Maybe you'll be successful because your talent might be overwhelming. But that's that gift that you have beyond maybe what a normal kid would have. Other kids. I shouldn't say normal. But I just want kids to be in an area that they can reach their potential. So that would be my own advice to them would be, into a parent, it behooves you to be the best role model that you can be. And a lot of times, things can be to your advantage. To give you an example, I was at the Football Hall of Fame banquet the other last month, and Leroy Marsh is there. I'm in that committee. And they introduced the players who had made the all-area team. And those kids marched in. They were introduced like Mario Smith, whatever, the school that you had come from. And those kids stood there before an audience, capacity audience of people. There were three kids nominated from that team, on that team, from Westside. None of them were there, you know. And I'm saying to myself, what a proud parent that would be if they had a chance to sit there where I was sitting and say to myself, that's my son. That's the type of thing that we need to get more involved in. Why those kids went there, I found out what the rationale was, and we're going to get that rectified. But I just felt kind of hurt myself inwardly because I didn't see a stronger representation of Westside kids that parents could have been benefited. So that's my only thing. I think that once they begin to understand that when they get involved, and it's not only are they enhancing themselves, but what they're doing for their family. It brings a bonding, your family, your mom. I mean, a lot of love for you. And when I was in, not too long ago, and I mentioned your name, and I lit up maybe more than she did, you know what I mean? But that's because I know that's the kind of feeling that she has and what you did. Yeah. And so forth. People need that. They need that. And when you look at reaching that plateau of 90 years, I mean, we're here for a purpose. I understand that God knows, the only one that knows what that purpose is. But you do what you can in everyday life to live up to that purpose. So that's about the only thing I can say on that.
He's Earl Smith. I usually leave, and then Dewan just kind of winds it down. It's his podcast. Thanks for letting me come in.
No, this is great.
And Earl, I have watched Dewan do this hundreds of times.
Yeah.
And I have never seen Dewan look so intently at someone as when you were talking just now. And I'll leave it at that. See both of you guys.
Well, I appreciate you. Yeah, thanks, Joe. Remember Coach James Welch at Banneker?
Yes.
Yeah, he taught me how to play basketball. Him and Coach Ballard, rest in peace.
Right, right.
All of Glen Park Biddy. That was the days in Midtown. But I was very fortunate, and I'm going to leave it off at this, is define what it means to be a coach for you. What's your definition of a coach?
Well, you have to try to be as knowledgeable as you can, which means that it behooves you to recognize you as a coach and that there are success stories that other people have encountered. So I spent time doing whatever paperwork I could do as far as checking out what Bobby Knight was doing. Mike Krzyzewski, who I know very well, Mike, I can tell you a story about him. But anyway, Mike Krzyzewski, some of the players, some of the successful coaches, and not that you're going to do exactly what they're doing, but it helps you to put your game in the right perspective that you hit it in the right direction. And if you can feel within yourself that you're giving the coaching profession all that you have to offer, that's all you can do.
Amen to that. I appreciate you sharing that because we have a lot of up-and-coming coaches. You've paved the way for a lot of coaches. You paved the way for a lot of people in general. Before we wrap it up, Rob, I want to hear a Coach K story, if you don't mind sharing.
Well,
I'm a huge fan of Coach K. You know, he retired, of course, and John Shire took over at Duke. But if you could share a Coach K story.
First,
real
before
quick.
I get to that, I'm sorry I didn't have the opportunity to coach you.
I would have played for you.
Because you
there's not too many people that I will play for now, but you're one of those pillars, you and Larry Moore and Coach Renardo Thomas.
Yes.
Rest his soul. But, yeah.
Yeah, we recognized the ability early. And I had been watching you for a long time, not just when you got to the high school level, you know. Right. But as far as the Mike Krzyzewski, I told you I'd be friend tonight.
Right.
And I used to go to his practice. Mike Krzyzewski, who had played for Knight at West Point, had gone into the military. Because I guess they have to do so much time after they finish. After he got out, he came to Bloomington as an assistant. And when I say an assistant, he didn't have a lot of responsibilities because Knight would have him washing down backboards and sweeping and doing that.
And this is Coach K.
This is Coach K. Yeah. He wasn't a notarized coach that he is today. He's Coach K, a young person aspiring to be a Knight. And so we got to be friends, during that time. And so, as a matter of fact, in 1975, when I took the Emerson team to the semi-state, Knight sent Krzyzewski to that semi-state to come by our locker room to wish us good luck from Bobby Knight. Mike Krzyzewski delivered that mail, was a message. Okay. All right, we corresponded, right? And maybe Mike might even hope he hadn't forgotten. But anyway, there was a guy, another guy that was part of a group. And I'm saying this, if Mike sees this podcast, I don't know if he would agree. But he had indicated something about it. Like if he got the head job, he would like to have one of us, or both of us, on his staff. So I'm watching TV one morning, and I turned up that Mike Krzyzewski had just been hired as the head coach at Duke. I said, what?
Wow.
So I got on the phone, and I called Mike Krzyzewski.
He pick up?
And he indicated that he appreciated that, but he had decided to go with this other guy that was befriending him as his assistant. But down through the years, I'm not saying I couldn't have continued to pursue it.
Right.
But when, I was coaching at that time, but to be in that level, and I had to feel confident to make a telephone call like that. And down through the years, he's been very receptive. If I call, he sent me when I retired. He sent me a nice letter of retirement and so forth, and I cherish that in the frame. But just the kind of relationship, the kind of bonding that you have, and I think that as a coach, and you're working in that capacity, the impact that you have on other coaches, whether or not they're head coaches or whatever. And I might say this, that I didn't mention this, but when you have talent opens up a lot of doors for you as an assistant. I signed a letter to be the assistant coach at the University of San Francisco, where Wallace Brown went. I signed it. I'm a coach at the University of San Francisco. My wife and I had gone down for a visit. I used to go down there like two or three times. And so when we got to the airport, some kind of way, I changed my mind on my way before I got on that plane. And I called the coach back and told him I wasn't going to take the job. Some was telling me to stay in Gary. But that's not to say that Vanderbilt, University of Tennessee, these were all options. That all they had to do was put my name on the to be an assistant coach. But that's why I truly believe this, Juan, that not only does God bless you, but there's always that thing of he places you where he feels you should be. And that's why I spent these 56 years doing what I've been doing down through the years, because I really truly believe that that's where I was supposed to be.
I appreciate that. Let's leave it at that. Episode 188 on the podcast, the legendary Hall of Fame. Coach Earl Smith joins me. It's been a long time coming. I've always seen Coach Smith in the field, at the gyms, have the utmost respect. We have the same network. He knows my family really well. And I thank you all for listening. And once again, hit subscribe, leave a review. Until not next week, but the week following, I have to go to Glendale, Arizona, cover some girls basketball. So thanks again, Coach Smith.
Appreciate it.
Thanks, Rob.